Ed and Chris Sherwood are internationally known crop circle researchers with more than 30 years combined study and experience of the worldwide crop circle phenomenon. Ed began crop circle research in 1984 and on-site field work in 1990. Chris began crop circle research in 91. Ed and Chris co-founded Millennium Research in January of 96, which is a multimedia project created to document and share their combined research concerning crop circles and related phenomena. There are special guests tonight on Coast to Coast. Hey, Ed, Chris, how are you both?
Good. How are you, George?
Hi, George.
Good.
Great.
Good. You have provided us some great images, which we'll go through in just a moment. Are we in any particular wave or season with crop circles right now?
In our view, we are in a kind of a special time right now. Because we feel that the genuine phenomenon, which has more than one source, but you could break down to two basic sources, what we call the primary source, has been giving us visual communications for more than 20 years now. And we've been studying this visual communication day in, day out for some years. And what we found is that, like everything, the communication has a beginning, a middle, and an end.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can recognize where the beginning is and so on, you might also discover when the end is. And we feel that there hasn't been a genuine non-man-made crop circle formation in Great Britain since 2001. So what you see in the field, or have seen in the field since 2001, has been man-made. And really shows you how many formations they can make and what kind of formations they can make. So, in a way, we are in a special season, but in our view, we're in a season of no genuine formations.
All right.
Communication, in our view, has mostly ended.
Why is that? What's going on?
Well, prophecy has been fulfilled, in our view. This when I say it's mostly finished, I'm talking about what we call a primary source, and I'll go into that in a little bit in a minute.
Sure.
But there are still formations popping up in far-flung places, including in this country, a few in number that we feel are made by an extraterrestrial source. So there's still something to sort of sink your teeth into. But, again, we have deciphered the communication, many of the communications that have been given over the last 20 years, and honestly, there's still a great deal of information about those formations, and we have decided more than 150, that isn't even yet in the public domain. So in a way, think of a phenomenon that was prophesied or referenced in, we found this to be referenced in certain prophecies, and that prophecy has been fulfilled. And we've been getting these signs for 20 years. And we've been looking at the messages, and the messages have been spelling it out every year about who and what's behind it. But it's definitely wound down.
Of these 20 years of crop formations, let's say, what percent of them do you think were actual, real, the other percent being done by humans?
Okay. Since 1990, if you were to total up all the formations we have on record since that time,
all right,
we feel that less than 10% were non-man-made. Now, that number, less than 10%, is still several hundred pictograms, and that's a very significant number.
Well, and it's still dramatic, even if you had said 1%.
Yes, even if
exactly.
One was,
yeah, exactly.
Was non-man-made, you know. And this percentage actually has varied quite a lot over the years. You know, from the beginning, of course, in the early years, the percentage of man-made formations was much less.
To give an example, in 2000, we felt, like one or two other people felt, that at least 80% of the formations of that year were man-made. That's just 2000, and that's just in Great Britain.
Mm-hmm.
In 1990, it was the reverse. In 1990, we feel that about 80%, approaching 80%, were non-man-made, and the rest were man-made. The numbers of varied from year to year dramatically. But there's been an awful lot of human circle making. It's a lot like the UFO phenomenon, where we know that the majority of sightings that people make often break down to be mundane phenomena. However, the small percentage which is left is still a tremendously significant number and cases and information.
Do you find that the crop formations that have occurred over the last 20 years were sent to us to send us a specific message or just to catch and grab our attention?
I think we've had multiple messages, but you could say that they all more or less fall under an umbrella message or one message, which is that we are co-creating this phenomenon with our consciousness, with our conscious participation in it. And that means just even just by looking at a crop circle or looking at a design or looking into the phenomenon.
An awful lot of our written research, our published articles, deal with what we saw in that message and go into specifics of individual formations and how in multi-layered, ways of referencing different things, the genuine phenomena is reflecting back to us things that are in the collective consciousness, things that have been questions that have arisen about the nature of it in our investigations. And
things we need to know, definitely. So
right.
It is a wake-up. I mean, the phenomenon of miraculous signs on the earth giving us all kinds of information, but particularly, again, you asked, is there one message? Well, many people around the world for more than 20 years have been asking the same basic question, who and what is mm-hmm. behind this phenomenon? And the answer to that question has been given every year in the fields. And amazingly, the source has a way of saying the same thing over again, but in many different ways. So one point that has been stated over and over again is what the true source of this phenomenon is, and we can go into that more.
We might as well dive into that right now as well, Ed and Chris, because for so many years, as we've talked about crop circles, crop formations on this program, there's always been that who or what. What's the message? Who's sending it? Is it coming from a parallel dimension, another universe? Is it coming from extraterrestrials? Is it a weather-related vortex? I mean, the theories abound.
Yes, and there are actually many aspects and many things that are going into creating this phenomenon, things like cosmic and planetary forces and our consciousness. And, you know, as Ed says, there are three basic sources that we see behind the phenomenon. One is, of course, the man-made phenomenon. The other is the extraterrestrial formations, the markings that have been made, you know, a lot of eyewitness accounts of structured craft leaving an area and leaving a ground trace mark or markings. And the primary source that we focus on is the one that we feel is actually coming from our consciousness and combined with a more infinite intelligence.
It's a divine source. Think of three basic sources that break down into more sources. One is the infinite intelligence and consciousness mm-hmm. of God, in our view, or divine force intelligence. But that in itself breaks down into more than one force, process, natural, supernatural, cosmic and terrestrial. It's as if a universal consciousness intelligence utilizes natural forces and supernatural forces, and the main supernatural force in this phenomenon is human consciousness and human participation of consciousness. But the primary source, we feel, brings all these things together or is synchronized to produce a miracle as a consequence of these things being brought together. But at the same time, there are extraterrestrial-made formations, mostly simple circles, a few simple pictograms, And but there's more than one ET civilization that has also made ground trace marks and UFO nests and crop circles. And then, of course, the third least important source, in our view, is deceptive human circle making.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course,
right.
again, you've got more than one individual and more than one group. So if you can remember, despite all the evidence and all the information and theories and so on, at least from us, from our experience, we feel that there are basically three sources, a divine one, an ET one, a human one, and they break down to many more. And in 1990, when I first stepped into the field to do research, I very quickly found that there was obviously more than one cause to a genuine formation.
That came to you right away, didn't it?
Yes, because of certain things that happened very quickly. And also because I was very interested in the physics at that time, and I saw that there was physics being employed in the creation process. And the more I got my mind around that, for example, discovered that certain weather conditions need to be present for these balls of light to form or beams of light mm-hmm. to occur that often precede crop circle creation. So it was as if some natural intelligence, or rather some intelligence, was respecting natural law, utilizing it in the creation process, and it just seemed to be way too much to be purely ET. Plus, the source was frequently sitting on your shoulder, listening into all your thoughts or what you were doing or where you was going to do something, and it was invariably stating things or doing things with that knowledge. So, I mean, I can quickly spin one off to you just from a human
circle maker.
Sure,
and then we'll get into that first image you sent us.
Right, okay. I've said this before, but it's a classic example. A human circle maker planned to make a formation deceptively in a field one night, and he wrote it on a piece of paper where, and he drew the formation,
mm-hmm.
and when he got there, it was waiting for him. this has happened more than once. This has happened to us an awful lot. We have many formations that have appeared in response to certain things we've done, said, many of which have been privately communicated. So, again, it has to be something sitting on your shoulder.
Something's watching, viewing, picking things up.
Exactly.
Yes.
That is something. It's almost like they definitely want you to know they know.
Yes, and it's also like a, because I've experienced many types of parapsychological phenomena, it's like a poltergeist, but on a global scale. Instead of the poltergeist sort of playing with your mind, moving objects around in a house, this is a global expression, if you like, and it's playing, or not playing, but it's interacting with your consciousness and your actions.
Have you been able, Ed and Chris, to decipher some of these messages in terms of trying to figure out exactly what this message might be? I mean,
yes,
could
exactly.
it be... Could it be evil motivated, or is it
no,
all good?
Not at all. It's
all right.
Purely benevolent. And a good way to kick that off might be to go to the first image.
All right, first image. This is one of those nights I wish everybody had a computer. Those that don't, Ed and Chris, do the best you can to kind of paint us a picture
sure.
of what they would be seeing if they had a computer.
Okay, well, first picture is on the left-hand side is a silhouette drawing of a crop circle formation that appeared in 1990. And on the right-hand side is a diagram which I found in a physics book, a 25-year-old physics book that I'd had for many years. And this formation appeared in 1990.
In England?
In England.
Okay.
And no one, as far as I know, has brought forward an explanation for what this pictogram means. But shortly before I saw the image of this formation, I had an experience in a crop circle of a strange sound. And that and a related event that happened soon after got me into looking at sound as a
mm-hmm.
possible component to the physics of crop circle creation. And when I turned to this physics book that I had for more than 10 years, I found inside it an identical diagram in its basic construction to the design symbolism of this 1990 crop circle. And what it stated very beautifully to describe the crop circle to those people who can't see it, imagine a simple circle with a thin ring around it, a concentric ring around it,
mm-hmm.
and then in between the ring and the circle, there are four arcs positioned in the sort of north, south, east, west position.
Kind of encircling, in a way, the circle.
That's right, encircling the inner circle and offset it, each one offset, two of them offset from the other two.
Right.
Anyway, the diagram I found in the physics book was the sound waves that resonate off a vibrating tuning fork. So the associated sound waves, and both the audible and the inaudible sound waves. In crop circles, myself and other people, some people have experienced an audible sound which comes from them or occurs in vicinity, and others that have recorded even sounds that were not heard at the time, but the recorders picked them up.
So what this 1990 crop circle is, based on your opinion, is basically a vibrating tune or sound wave.
It's depicting two things. It's depicting the physics and metaphysics of sound. And also, I feel like the crop circle formation was giving the answer, one answer, to the question of who and what is behind this. Who is behind it? Well, to look at the crop circle glyph, a circle and a ring around it is the oldest ancient sacred symbol used the world over to depict and symbolize the sun and God. So a creator concept.
Okay.
And in this formation, you had that. And then in between the circle and the ring, you had these arcs, which related to the physics diagram of sound waves emanating from a tuning fork. So you had the physics of sound in this formation, but also you had the metaphysics, because common to many cultures, ancient cultures, particularly world over, is the concept of universal creation coming into being through the spoken word or sound of a creative force, principle, or God, or being. And the opening chapter of the Gospel of St. John says this beautifully. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. You know, you could take the Word and change that to creation. In the beginning was creation, and creation was with God, and creation was God. You could also think of the Word as vibrations and frequencies, and how in science it, you know, we would think of the beginning of the universe as being a birthing of vibrations and oscillations and frequencies. So you have both a crop circle symbolizing the word, in a sense, creation, and also from a divine source, and also you have the physics.
Okay, what about the why? Why do this? Why send us messages that most people can't figure out?
Yeah, that's a good point. Well, one answer to that, I think, is because we are meant to try to think it out, try to work it out. We're meant to question it. We're meant to look into it. It's not meant to be simply spelled out to us.
Maybe a revelation somewhere, Ed?
There is, definitely. Yes.
Yeah, once we figure it out.
Yes, exactly. And it's in... we found that by deciphering many of these formations that we learn things, too. We find things that we didn't know before. So there's definitely things being revealed, very significant. But also, I think that this is a prophesized phenomenon, and we're living in a very special time. And these are signs on the earth, and we're beginning signs both on the earth and in the sky, as has been prophesized.
All right, stay with us, Ed and Chris Sherwood. We'll be back with you in a moment. We'll look at a UFO image over Costa Mesa, California. This is kind of strange indeed. Lots more on Coast to Coast AM. Noriet and Chris Sherwood, our guests, their website, cropcircleanswers.com, linked up at coasttocoastam.com. Ed and Chris, the second source of non-man-made crop circles, you believe, extraterrestrial civilizations. Now, before we go to image number two, tell me a little bit about your thoughts, and how did you come to this conclusion?
Well, before I started researching crop circles, I was researching and experiencing UFO encounters. And as I'm sure you and many of the audience knows, there have been reports of metallic structured objects going into vegetation, many types of terrestrial vegetation, and when they leave the area they leave behind, a classic circle or a set of circles. A good example is one in Mexico in 95 near Toluca Airport. Metallic structured objects were witnessed by air traffic controllers and ground personnel descending into fields, and when they took off, they left behind ground markings. The extraterrestrial, there's definitely an extraterrestrial source to some of the crop circle formations, but what I've found looking at ones that we can be sure were made by them and those that we are used to encountering in England, let's say, that show evidence of being genuine too, but there's a tremendous difference in the biophysical aspect of the formations, and that's how we can one of the ways we can tell them apart.
Okay, let's look at the picture number two that you sent us, and this, of course, was the UFO over Costa Mesa, California. I guess you're just trying to demonstrate the possibility of ETs.
Yes, and well, this was put in because it looks a lot like some of the objects that were filmed over Mexico City in July 11th, 91.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a lot what I really wanted to talk about. You know, that was an unprecedented event in 91. In my view, it still is the most significant single mass witnessed UFO sighting of the last century. And so significant because apart from being witnessed by so many people and filmed from different vantage points and happening during a total solar eclipse, it was prophesied by the Maya and 1,200 years ago that said when this total solar eclipse occurs, you know, two things would begin with it. One is the return of the beings from the stars, and also this that it would usher in a new age of cosmic awareness, human awareness to our cosmic environment, including the fact we're not alone. And that's exactly what happened over the world's largest city 14 years ago, and it's been continuing ever since, and to a point where, although we have UFO events, encounters happening worldwide, and incredible events happening in every country, Mexico has become the country that has the most of practically everything. And
I wonder why.
Well, I think...
Well, yeah, we both think, I'll jump in here to make a comment. We feel that it's a lot because of the openness in Mexico to this reality, the openness of the media. Whenever there are sightings, people go out and stand on the street with their camcorders, and they say on the news there are ovnis over the city, and call people's attention to it. There's a great deal of acceptance and openness about it, and we feel that is one of the reasons that so much activity is going on in Mexico.
They're also, by being so open, by putting it on television, by educating their population about what's happening over the skies, and doing it in a with a great interest, curiosity, is that they are satisfying the conditions, I think. They're supporting the phenomenon because clearly the intelligences behind many of these sightings want us to see them. They want to be acknowledged. And how can we really have a global exchange? How can we really move forward in this subject until we acknowledge their very existence?
What are they afraid of, though, Ed? Why don't they just simply, you know, like the old movie, The Day the Earth Stood Still, why don't they just simply land right in front of us?
I think it's coming, but it's a very delicate issue down here. And there's so much fear in people in general that has to be... you know, it has to be done safely.
There would be panic. I'm convinced there would be widespread panic.
I think that depends on how it's done. If you think about it, for the last 50 years, extraterrestrial intelligences of many kinds have been testing the sociological reaction of human beings. Every time they appear, every time they put an object over a city,
sure,
or you know, where there's a group of people, they are testing our social response. And at least those that care. I mean, there's always the possibility of those coming and going that are indifferent.
Mm-hmm.
But there's so much evidence that they're probably the minority, because there are some that come and come and come and keep coming back again and again and showing us that they exist. And if you think of Independence Day, the movie, then yes, scary.
But they are scary.
Imagine a small object just sitting over the city for several days and nights.
And not doing anything, just sitting there.
Just sitting there for us to look at, doing nothing, but just letting us look at it so we can fully get to grips with the fact that we're not alone.
Yeah, but you know what would happen? Helicopters would go up there, jets would go up there, and who knows what would happen.
Well, maybe. But,
I'm sure that they've seen all of our movies and tap into our television shows
indeed.
And know what our attitudes are.
Plus there's some evidence that at least some of them have, I think, been conducting a sociological process with the military, too. So it's not just with the civilian population. And that includes, there's been some famous cases where objects have hovered over nuclear silos, for example. Along the Canadian-American border in the 80s and
I think they've even disarmed some of those missiles.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I think there's many ways that they probably think they could appear, because I think more that we're heading towards a global exposure of the fact we're not alone. So think of a mass sighting that everyone on the planet basically gets to see. I think we're heading in that direction, and it's coming up on us pretty fast.
Now, will we as a government announce it to the people, or when you say it's coming, I mean, how are we going to be made aware, I think, of this?
We've been progressively been made aware, I think, over the last few decades. You know, the sightings have increased. They're occurring more and more over centers of population. They clearly want to be seen. They're doing it safely, for the most part.
Maybe it'll take a calamity, and then they'll decide we're going to do this
is
now.
That possibly?
Well, I think they see that's coming to the planet right now,
exactly.
And that's a lot of the reason that they're...
And it has happened.
Right.
You know, there have been major UFO sightings shortly before, you know, over centers of population, shortly before calamity.
Sure.
Turkey in 1999, Istanbul, thousands of people killed by an earthquake. Shortly before that devastating event, there were many sightings, UFO sightings, both of the plasma type and of the structured craft type, even to the point where there was fear in Turkey shortly afterwards when the information was brought out about the UFO events that they some people thought they may have even caused it. But you look at Mexico, for example, and since the sightings of 1991, which progressively took people's attention to Mount Popo, the fourth largest volcano in the world, where in 1994 it began to come alive and start to erupt. Again, there's evidence that there are definite intelligences extraterrestrial that think about our welfare, have concerns for the planet. I think there's a lot at stake here. It's not just humanity that's at stake, or the planet. I think there is a cosmic thing happening here. I think the planet, in a sense, is like a Genesis project, and we're here, all of us here, as learners, to learn as much as we can about the real important things of life before we leave this world. And one of those things is to realize that we exist in a universe of full of intelligence and self-aware beings.
Items 3 and 4 that you've sent us, the first one you call a disc dolphin design. Tell me about that. And that is an actual crop circle?
Yes. This was there was a series of 4 major crop circle pictograms that appeared in Wiltshire, England, shortly after the historic Mexico City July 11, 1991 event. A little more than 2 weeks after that eclipse and sighting witnessed by millions occurred, a massive formation appeared in Wiltshire, which is figure 3. It looks like imagine a black silhouette of a cross section of a flying saucer. So you've got like a disc.
It looks like one.
With a circle at each end of the rim.
Yeah.
And then you've got 2 appendages, one on each side of the middle of the disc. So it looks almost like a dolphin too. And some people, including myself, saw this symbology. This was a communication. But why a dolphin? And why combine a dolphin with a disc? And also, this was a genuine formation. This wasn't a man-made formation. Soil inside it was tested in a laboratory by a nuclear physicist and found to have short-lived radio deuterium isotopes in it, in the soil, inside the formation, which could only be created inside a laboratory.
That, I'm sure, wasn't there before this was placed there.
Definitely not. So it was saying this is a genuine formation, but even the presence of the isotopes was part of the message, because I feel I decoded this formation shortly after I heard about it. Again, here's a formation that's answering who and what is behind genuine crop circle creation. It's a very kind of cleverly stated one, because you have a dolphin. A dolphin is...
And how big is that crop circle?
This was a more than 300 feet
long. Oh, my gosh.
Long.
Okay,
you know,
now...
It was a great big formation.
Can it be made by man? I assume it could, right?
Oh, it could be imitated and flattened down with rollers and such. Like, yes, but...
All right, a couple guys, Ed, how long would that take?
Oh, that would take them several hours. But then you've got the radioisotopes in the soil, and then
right.
You've got an amazing communication that actually what it states in the most beautiful and simple way. It occurred 2 weeks, a little more than 2 weeks after this historic event over Mexico City. So millions of people in Mexico were witnessing the fact that we're not alone. And I feel that the collective psychokinetic energy of that helped to co-create this formation. And it even gave us clues as to, you know, what is behind the creation of this formation.
What do the little dots represent, by the way?
They're little extra, there's two circles that are close together and one slightly larger than the other. And that has been, for a long time, in the early years, was a sign, like a signature sign.
Yeah, it's like the artist.
Exactly. It was like a signature of the artist.
Because it's in that fourth image also, up there in the left-hand corner.
Exactly. Until the hoaxers picked up on this, and started to imitate it.
I see.
It was there. But what's particularly interesting about this formation is the fact that it looks like a symbolic dolphin. But why a dolphin? Why would a dolphin be symbolized? Well, dolphins exist in the water element. Water is a very big component of the physics of non-man-made crop circle creation. They typically appear where there's presence of either below ground or above ground, including in the air, water or water vapor.
Well, and some people believe dolphins are not of this planet.
Yes, some do.
So who knows?
I feel that despite their great intelligence, the reason why a dolphin was put here was like to say, think of the maker or the creator of this formation as natural. Don't think of the creator of this formation as extraterrestrial. This formation is saying several things, cross-referencing several things, and one is that the answer to who created this, well, dolphins didn't create it, but something of natural intelligence, i.e., divine intelligence did. But trying to answer the physics or look at what created it, energy was involved that we feel was probably a plasma-type event, and this formation even states that, because at each rim, there's a ring. And at the rim where the dolphin's head would be, or the nose would be, where dolphins communicate by ultrasound, sound and sonic and ultrasonic energy. And one of these circles is slightly larger than the other to suggest, you know, it's emanating from there.
And are these are perfect circles?
Near perfect.
Yeah.
And it's giving a clue to the physics of the crop circle creation process. I looked at these circles and thought of electrostatic charges, because if you think of a disk, where does electrostatic charge accumulate on a disk? It particularly accumulates at the rim. And if you, again, imagine this two-dimensional crop circle as a three-dimensional form, you'd realize that the circles are right where the rim is. And so I feel it was saying plasma technology. You know, the ETs because this is reflecting, remember, the July 11th, 91 event. This is affirming, I think, the significance of it, both figure 3 and 4. By the way, this type of design symbol has not appeared again since.
It was just in 1991, that was it?
It was just 91, just after the world's largest city had its great big, you know, major sighting event of the fact we're not alone. And it's almost like it was mirrored in the field, symbolized, you know, stated in a symbolic fashion by the primary source. So this wasn't ETs doing this, even though it was affirming the fact we're not alone.
Well, why do you distinguish that, you know, of the three sources, divine, ET, man-made, why throw in divine? Why not all ET or all man-made?
Because we've had many experiences and also have gone over a lot of evidence, and also we've deciphered a lot of formations that constantly point to a cosmic intelligence that utilizes multiple natural and supernatural forces, including the psychokinetic energy of human consciousness.
And also the symbols are put together in such absolutely ingenious visual metaphors, stating sometimes multiple concepts and multiple references that are totally beyond, you know, human endeavor or ability to come up with.
Well, I got to tell you, the image number 5, which we'll talk about at the top of the hour that you've sent me, is one of the most inspiring ones I've seen, an illuminated disc rising above one of the circles. We'll talk about that in a moment. Again, if you have a computer, get up to these images at coasttocoastam.com. All right, ever hear of Close Encounter of the Fifth Kind? That's what we're going to talk with Chris and Ed Sherwood about in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. I'm George Norrie. Ed and Chris Sherwood, our guests here. We talk about crop formations. Chris, I'll have you describe this image number 5, if you would like, the illuminated disc.
Okay, I can start that, but since it's an experience Ed had, he'll probably have to add a little
sure,
to it because
absolutely.
He has a little more background in
I'll
it.
Let you kind of just fill it in.
Okay, well, this is an illustration Ed did of an encounter that he had a year, almost exactly a year after the two formations previously we were discussing appeared, the two saucer-gram-looking formations. And this encounter and the sighting that he had happened in England, and what he saw rise from over the hill, or not the hill, I'm sorry, over a hedge, was an object that was illuminated on either end, but it looked pretty well identical to the crop diagram that is the diagram immediately before this picture, and in the same location. It occurred in the same location. And I'll let him describe that in a minute, but I will say that on a number of occasions, luminous manifestations have happened over fields. You know, in England is mainly where I know the stories from, that have the light phenomena has taken on a shape in the sky, and later a crop formation very similar to that has appeared either there or nearby.
Well, and I've got to tell you, that picture, number 5, is uncanny. It is just like the crop circle, number 4.
Exactly, and
yeah.
And that's what really leapt out at me at the time, because I knew the location very well. I was only about 300 feet from this object, which was dead silent, and it looked exactly like the pictogram that appeared at the spot it was hovering over the year before. And I feel I deciphered this formation and linking it to the Mexico City July 11th, 91 event. And I feel like, in a sense, I gave acknowledgement to it. And I was out in this field at the dead of night alone in a wheat field near a wood which has had a lot of UFO activity. And I basically said to the universal mind of God, okay, creator, okay, benevolent ET intelligences, I'm alone, I'm here in the heart of crop circle country, and I'm available. I'm available for interaction, and I'm not afraid. And within perhaps a minute or two of stating that out loud,
Here it comes.
Here it comes. It first started, though, as balls of light, but then I saw two of those, and I tried to interact with them from a distance with my mind, and they responded. But this picture here is the third thing that appeared, which wasn't the ball plasma, but was definitely something extraterrestrial.
I got to tell you, it is startling. And then all of a sudden, of course, the formation occurred?
The formation was there the previous year, and I felt like the very fact that the craft appeared there to me interactively when I asked it to appear, you know, I asked something to appear, I stated, I asked the creator, and I got ball plasma within 2 minutes. And then I also asked for, you know, extraterrestrial, benevolent extraterrestrial intelligence, as you know, I'm here, and, you know, they replied very quickly.
Okay, there's no question there's some kind of a message behind these formations. The symbols that they use, some of them are obvious, like it duplicated the craft in terms of what it looked like. But the symbols that they use, do you think it might be their language at all?
No, I don't. No, I think that this is one of the ways you can, or two of the ways you can differentiate ET-made formations from what I would say was a divine miracle,
mm-hmm.
is to study their biophysics, so that is the study the soil and study the plants, and you'll notice that those that are made by structured technology, the energies that create those formations have very, very severe and dramatic effects on the soil and plants. It's very common to find burning, for example, charring, to find dead or disformed plants, or find that plants won't grow up again on extraterrestrial craft landing trace marks.
Mm-hmm.
However, in many of the genuine formations we've found in England, i.e. formations where I've seen plants bent 90 degrees in addition to their natural bend without even a crease, so it's like they were steamed into position. The energies that created these were very, very gentle. They did not damage the soil. They did not alter the soil's chemistry so things wouldn't grow up, nor did the effect on a plant, nor was it so dramatic that it changed it every few hours, like in Toluca in 95 when structured vehicles landed in squash, for example. The leaves of the squash plants kept changing every few hours. They kept looking like they were bubbling on the surface. Well, the primary source, the divine source making basically modern-day miracles,
yeah.
It's much more gentle.
And it actually, experiments have been done from seeds grown from crop circle formations, non-man-made crop circle formations, and we did this ourselves several years ago, and the energies have a subtler effect and even a beneficial effect to the point where seeds that we planted from a formation that appeared in 1995 sprouted 6 wheat stems instead of the usual one. There was multiple sprouting, you know, like
6 heads off one stem, which is we haven't heard that since ancient Egypt, when the ancient Egyptians used to grow wheat that was 6 feet tall and had 7 heads off one stem. We had the same effect from planting seeds from inside a large genuine formation in 95. So the energies increased the fertility of the seeds or affected it.
Now, these have obviously been studied by scientists, haven't they? Have they done some tests?
Yes. Dr. W.C. Levengood of Michigan has worked on crop circles for 15 years or around about that figure.
And he agrees there's something very unusual going on here, right?
Oh, definitely. And of course, the biophysical effects vary from formation to formation. And that's why I feel that, you know, if you want to differentiate or try to look at the evidence of those that seem to be of a structured ET nature, and then you look at the evidence of those that seem to be more ball plasma and something supernatural and natural, is that the biophysical evidence helps a lot to differentiate the two. And there's one other thing, and that is the communication, the actual pictogram meaning itself. Remember at the beginning of the program, we said the question that many has asked, who and what is behind this, has been answered in the fields, in the formations, every year for more than 15 years.
Mm-hmm.
And it said it in geometry, mathematics, design symbolism, and phenomenal events. And it's also indicated in the biophysical evidence too. So if you get your mind around the genuine crop circle communications, you find they keep saying God, 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 natural intelligence, divine intelligence, infinite intelligence.
Have you ever seen a crop circle develop right under your nose?
Not right under my nose, but from a distance. And this would bring us on to our next picture, number six, of a orange ball plasma. 2 days before this picture was taken, I witnessed an identical ball of light.
And how big is this ball?
It's about 15 to 20 feet in diameter.
Oh, that's huge.
Yeah,
okay.
And the photographer was very close. In fact, the photographer of this picture asked me just 15 minutes before she took it how to photograph ball plasma.
Yeah.
Because invariably you go to reach for your camera and it vanishes. Or it avoids people with cameras and will appear to people without cameras. You know, it's very interactive with your consciousness, and you can't get away with anything.
Is it hot, Ed? I mean, if you were hit by this, would you get killed?
You would most definitely get knocked out.
All right.
You might not get killed.
Would you be burned or scorched?
Not necessarily. I think if you were to stick your hand in it, you would feel cold, not hot.
Really? Okay.
Yes, but that's not to say, though, you might not experience a burning effect.
Sure.
But if you did, it would be from within.
Well, that's true. With cold, you can burn.
Well, it's also like microwave energy. I feel that these ball plasmas are emitting high-frequency sounds, ultrasound, and ultrasound can do just what microwaves can do. It can cook internally.
Absolutely. You know? Now, these ball plasmas, though, they just appear, or do you see them rolling in?
Well, I witness them in two ways. One is I feel they're going to appear, and then they appear, and I see them just as that photograph is. But also I see them before they appear. There are other types of luminosity that appear at that site, which other people may or may not see around me. So there's luminous energy forming before these manifest, but it's of a frequency that is invisible to the human eye and ordinary consciousness, but you can record it with cameras.
Now, number seven, what did you mean by ball plasmas forming during group meditation?
Well, this was an example, one of many we've done, but this one particularly had a very strong response. We held a meditation at a certain place, or in fact, just before we held a meditation at a certain place, a ball plasma appeared close by, a few miles from us, but we had great visibility. We were on a hill, and we could see what was going on, and I filmed it. Then we did the meditation, where we imagined that we were energizing the land and stimulating it to release its energy, and then another ball plasma appeared. But this time, I asked it on camera to do three things, because I have already previously experienced many times before this that ball plasma, or plasma in itself, is highly, highly psycho-interactive. It's highly sensitive,
very charged,
to consciousness.
Yeah.
Well, also to the input of consciousness. Just by looking at it, you can make requests in a certain state of mind, and it will respond.
How do you know it's not a spirit, Ed?
Pardon?
How do you know it's not a spirit or some kind of apparition like that?
Oh, this is way too big. I mean, I've seen these up to 100 feet in diameter.
Oh, my. Okay.
I've seen them dwarf helicopters that go to intercept them, and I've seen one from a distance create a crop circle formation, and, you know, there's many things that would differentiate it.
Yeah. These plasmas also do appear worldwide, and they're known in a lot of different areas, like in the Hesteland Valley of Norway. There's been a project studying plasmas like this for over 20 years, and there are areas like the Brown Mountain Lights in North Carolina, Lake Ontario, Canada.
Sure.
Worldwide. They appear worldwide, and they just have different regional names. They have the Min Min Lights in Australia, many places worldwide where geophysically, you know, there need to be certain conditions where they, you know, are able to manifest. But they do appear. Just this area of England happens to be a very...
There appears to be then some intelligence behind it?
There is intelligence, but I feel that the intelligence behind the manifestation of the Ball plasmas is one and the same as the intelligence behind the primary source formations. It's everywhere.
Yeah.
You know, it's
yeah.
not in that Ball plasma per se. It's there and it's everywhere else too.
Yeah.
It's just manifesting under that form. But that form is not exactly what it is. You know, it's more than that. But this particular one, image 7, I asked it on camera with two other witnesses if it could show us that it was aware of our presence by either moving dramatically, changing form, and or increasing in brightness. And within seconds, it did all three. And it was 4 miles from us. So it showed that there was absolutely no distance whatsoever between the consciousness of the observer making that request and the Ball plasma 4 miles away responding to it.
And the request and the reaction almost instant, I would guess.
They were very, very quick. And the previous one, image 6, a month after that happened, a month after the woman photographed this, asking first, because she asked me how to photograph Ball plasma, I said, well, ask first, you know. And she went up a hill, disappeared over the hill, and her car stalled, and this ball of light rose up behind the hedge, and she asked first. She had the presence of mind to ask. And it just sat there and let her roll off a whole load of film.
Now, the plasma, does it make the crop formation, or does it just happen to be there when these are going on?
No, I don't. Neither. I feel that the Ball plasmas are part of the creative process.
All right.
They may be there. They may not be there. They may be there but not visible. They may be in the vicinity. I've witnessed more than 100 Ball plasmas in the last 15 years, and I only saw one create a crop circle from a distance.
All right. Image 8. This is an interesting one taken in the Santa Monica Mountains in California.
This is an example, a little example of many that we have on our website in our psychic photography gallery. Basically, we have tried to document and record the energy that's present when we do meditations before, during, and after, and also to document the same type of energy that precedes, in my experience, the appearance of Ball plasma. So you've got a more subtle, invisible to ordinary consciousness manifestation of energy, which is there, even if you can't see it in an ordinary state of consciousness, but you can if you alter it, and certainly it's visible to infrared sensitive camera equipment. And this is a picture of we did a meditation in the mountains to celebrate the winter solstice of 2000.
Mm-hmm.
It's at a place in the mountains where I feel there is a vortex, what could be you know, the same basic kind of place that you'd put a sacred site, but in this case, it's just in a wood. And we did our solstice meditation, and just after, various things manifested, which we saw, and partly photographed. And just to make sure that we weren't photographing other things caught in the flash, I went back the following day to the very spot, and while I was looking for the mundane things to say mistakenly photographed, I felt a presence a few feet from me, and I turned around and instinctively shot the camera towards it and recorded this column of luminous mist. It was at least 30 feet tall. That's only a little tiny piece of it in the picture.
Right.
And it just rose up from like a dime kind of spot on the ground.
All right. Now, what do you think this was?
I think this is again, a manifestation of the divine making it, I don't like to say its presence known because it's not really an it, but I feel it was interactive manifestation with my consciousness open to, the infinite mind. And so it's like having a little miracle just manifested to reinforce and affirm that. And we have we're a self-funded team here. We have no funding from outside whatsoever, and all the funding we have comes from day jobs. But we've poured several thousands of dollars into trying to document basically the presence of energy that is there, whether you see it or not. That typically is there when you meditate is to show the reality of these things.
And there's obviously a tie-in between, I think, psychic energy, consciousness, and these formations then.
They're all locked together.
Mm-hmm. Yes. It is a psychokinetic phenomenon, really, I feel. Most of the genuine formations, if you could make all the man-made ones disappear off the record and you could separate the ET ones, what you're left with is very much a psychokinetic, global psychokinetic phenomenon, which is also partly occurring because of the global consciousness state that we're in. I've witnessed poltergeist phenomena in my life, and I know that often it occurs to draw your attention to something you're not giving your attention to.
And these are happening all around the planet now, aren't they?
Which?
The formations, the orbs, the plasmas, it's everywhere. It's not just England.
No, exactly. But with the formations, the genuine formations, it has been predominantly, more than... The greatest percentage of genuine formations have occurred within 40 miles of Stonehenge.
We'll talk about that when we come back. Hold on. Ed, tell me about this tie-in with Stonehenge and what was going on there.
Well, it's a very interesting fact of the crop circle phenomenon that most of the formations, most of the genuine ones, have formed around Stonehenge. I think that... there are certain places on the Earth where, let's say, natural energy is concentrated, almost like a chakra of a human body, and Stonehenge falls under that. And we have more than 900 stone circles, for example, in Great Britain. That's probably more stone circles in such a small area of land compared to other land masses in the world than anywhere else. The fact that the phenomenon has focused in England and that the English language is such a widespread language, I think, has greatly facilitated in it spreading around the world.
Do you have any doubts that Stonehenge was built by man?
No.
Okay.
Not really, no.
Neither do
no,
I.
But that's not to say it was not inspired by higher principles.
True.
So,
or helped out. Those stones are pretty big.
Exactly. But... The genuine crop circle phenomenon has, for more than two decades now, also appeared in close proximity to major ancient sacred sites, not just Stonehenge, but others, typically Avebury and Silbury Hill, for example, two major sites. Silbury Hill itself is one of two pyramids we have in Great Britain, ancient Neolithic pyramids. And in the 80s, it was observed that the formations are not only forming on energetic, dowsable places in the landscape where Earth energy converges, but also they were occurring more and more and closer to major sacred sites. Like to say to us, and they did say this in their design symbolism too, that this is coming from a sacred source.
I want to jump ahead, if we can, for just a moment, Ed, to pictures 16 and 17, because they are bizarre, to tell you the truth. The flying humanoid over Santa Monica and over Mexico City, when you look at them and try to compare the structure, they look like they could be the same thing. One obviously looks like it may be in some kind of craft of some sort, and the other not. But tell me what these are.
Image number 16 is a still image from a piece of footage that I shot from an encounter we had over our apartment in broad daylight last November. And the interesting thing about this encounter was that we just learned from a good friend and colleague, Santiago Iturria, from Mexico, who has been documenting the flying humanoid phenomenon in Mexico extensively, and he released on the internet early last year reports of these being sighted in Mexico. Then we met him the following month, and then later on in the year we attended a presentation he gave where he showed at least 10 different clips of different types of humanoids filmed in Mexico, and most of them looked identical to what we filmed
Yes.
over our apartment.
The head and the body looked the same.
Yep, and the head moved, and the body twisted on its torso, and it, what looked like arms moved and came out. It was an interactive experience too for us, because I mean, but just the fact we'd just learned of these types of events and seen some images ourselves. 3 months later, we then had the experience. But also, yeah. The night before, I asked for, and I don't usually ask, even though I've had a lot of encounters in my life, I don't usually ask ETs for a sign unless I, you know, feel really necessary. And on this particular occasion, a few hours basically late at night, I asked for a sign of support, and the very next morning, there was this flying humanoid figure coming towards us over the tops of the roofs, only about 3 blocks from us.
It looks like a flying Sasquatch.
Yeah, it was. He was about 7 feet tall from the estimate we could make of its size.
Well, do you think, was he in an object? I don't see that. It looks like he's just floating up there.
Exactly, and when you look at the clips from Mexico, it seems as if some are flying unaided, or at least it's not obvious how they are flying, and others seem to be aided with technology. The image number 17 taken by Horacio Roquette in Mexico City, an area of Mexico City, June of this year, seemed as if it was sitting on something.
Yeah, yet you can see his feet underneath it.
That's right.
Right?
It's like he's sitting almost on a chair of some kind, a vehicle, something you can sit on, and there's a power source.
Looks like a flying Ski-Doo.
Yeah, and it's amazing because we have seen the footage. I mean, this is a still, but we've seen the actual footage, and it is incredible. And this gentleman has also filmed this twice more since then because the events are ongoing.
You don't think it's some human experimenting with some kind of device, do you?
No.
No, they've been filmed enough times, and the footage zoomed in enough to where you can see there's nothing, supporting them.
And also there's so much UFO activity happening, either side of this, where these things are happening, that it's clearly related. But I would like to add, though, that I don't think these flying humanoids that are being witnessed down in Mexico and a few in the U.S., are the same beings behind what are also being witnessed, particularly in Mexico, and being called UFO fleets. That is, they're not just witnessing...
Which would be picture 18, right?
Yes, exactly. Okay. Picture 18 was taken by Rosario Oviedo in, above the capital city of San Luis Potosi in Mexico, on the day that Jaime Masson was scheduled to give a conference, a precedented conference about the UFO activity in Mexico. So this was, I think, an interactive event for Jaime, at least to affirm the information that he was putting out publicly at the time about these type of things. But in Mexico, in the last 3 years, then this is information given by our good friend Santiago Iteria, mm-hmm. who's written some excellent reports on these events. As of the last 3 years, roughly, the UFO activity in Mexico has increased dramatically through the sightings of fleets and also the sightings of these flying humans.
And explain fleets for everyone.
Well, fleets, multiple objects, on several occasions have been filmed in broad daylight with what looked like up to 100 objects in the sky. Each one of the objects appears to be mostly a disc similar to the one we showed you, image number 2, which I forgot to mention was photographed by Tom Augustine, who recently passed away. He was a pilot who had an amazing experience and with that image. But it looked individually, each one of these little UFOs, white UFOs, they look like discs. And
we should say to the people who can't see these images that these are photographed in blue sky, broad daylight, and very clear. It's not pinpoint of light in the dark.
Clearly they want to be seen, and at the same time, they're doing it in a way that I think is safe. They're not panicking the population mm-hmm. where they're appearing above. They're appearing, high up enough, or they're small and not scary objects, and they're silent. And they,
just
they,
strange.
They appear for a while and then they disappear.
What do you think is going on with these?
Well, this one in particular is very interesting because it appeared there were two simultaneous fleet sightings on June 24th of this year over two capital cities in Mexico, and the second one, which probably only occurred very much close to the same time as the other one in San Luis Potosi, the picture that's here, occurred over Alapa, which is a capital city close to the Gulf Coast. And in fact, it's the capital city of the state of Veracruz on the Gulf Coast. And what was interesting about this other event was that it was witnessed. It was a broad daylight event. Multiple objects, 14 were observed. But it was also witnessed by the mayor of the capital city, a lot of police, a lot of the media, which also filmed it. And the objects didn't just appear sort of randomly in the sky. They formed a sign in the sky.
A sign.
And I'm working on an article right now, which I hope to have on our website in the next few weeks, which is perhaps going to be somewhat controversial because it seems that there were UFO signs on both sides of the Gulf Coast before Hurricane Katrina came through and did its damage. And both of these signs were very portentous.
And what kind of signs? Like zodiac or
no.
What?
The first sign, which appeared over Alapa, and particularly over the major government building of that capital city, which was kind of like the White House equivalent, place called Casa Veracruz, which translated means House of the True Cross. Well, interestingly, right across from Alapa and Casa Veracruz geographically is New Orleans. And 9 days before Hurricane Katrina was declared a tropical storm, seven UFOs were reportedly filmed, and we've seen images, and again, this is an article in progress, but apparently over Florida, 9 days before Hurricane Katrina was declared a tropical storm, seven UFOs appeared in the sky and were filmed forming a cross in the sky.
That's amazing. I had not heard that.
So imagine you've got, I think it's like four or five UFOs, just like these clusters, but positioned one above the other with a gap in between and one either side, and it forms a Latin cross. Not just any cross, but a Latin cross.
Do you see them fly into that formation?
No. No, the only available clip of footage from this that was apparently sent in to a website shows a very short clip of the videographer trying to zoom in on these seven objects. I've had someone who's knowledgeable in digital effects look at the raw digital clip that we have and say it's very, very interesting and it looks like it could well be authentic. And it's very, very uncanny. Even, you know, at this point, we can't fully authenticate because we're still trying to get more information on this cross in the sky over Florida just before the hurricane came through. But it looks like, again, the ETs that are operating in our skies are very aware of what's happening down on the ground, and they are appearing so that we see them, hoping, I think, that we acknowledge their existence so that we can move forward, so we can actually maybe start to have exchange, contact, interaction on a more developed scale.
Why Mexico?
Again, I think, echoed by Chris earlier, they are responding the most positive and open to these events. And imagine if you're an extraterrestrial civilization that, let's say, is very aware of what's happening on planet Earth and with humanity, and is very concerned with the damage that's taking place to the planet by our actions, and wanting to stimulate us to wake up and realize certain realities, including we're not alone. They need to appear so that we see them, and they need us to acknowledge them. Once we acknowledge their existence, we can really move on. But until we acknowledge their existence, you know, they can't directly, easily help us. to avoid things like disastrous events. They can't warn us easily. They can't do anything until we globally acknowledge they exist.
What about the tsunami of December 26?
It's a good question, and we're looking into that. We've for some months now, we've been very interested in knowing if there were any UFO events, plasma and or structured vehicles that preceded that event. But certainly, on other occasions, they have shown that they are aware. And if this cross in the sky was an authentic piece of footage, which at least preliminarily it looks like it was, they're giving us clear signs. A cross in the sky before Hurricane Katrina came through. I mean,
I sometimes wonder, Ed, if the apparitions that people saw at Fatima, when they claimed that the sun came down, I wonder if they were looking at some object, not the sun, and maybe it was directly in front of the sun, you know, in terms of its perspective. But I wonder if it was an object that came down and then went back up again.
Possibly. Or they witnessed the collective psychokinetic manifestation of their consciousness, their collective consciousness. So, if you were able to get the consciousness energy of all the people present witnessing and manifest a symbolized collective expectation, then, psychokinetic energy is very, very potent energy.
Have your conclusions of these three potential sources, have they evolved based on the years of experience in your research, or did you have these thoughts relatively soon into your studies?
I had them pretty soon. I started doing research in 1984 from a distance through all available literature. Then in 1990, when I stepped into the field interactively to find out for myself really what's going on, because certain indications were pointing to that these events were not just landing marks, but this is really a communication that was being laid out in the fields for us to study. I quickly came to the conclusion after just one season that there was more than one source. They weren't all man-made. They weren't all ET-made either. There's more than one source, and that there had to be another source other than extraterrestrial at work. Because of all the phenomenal events, the nature of the biophysical evidence, and also the communication. You know, we've studied the design symbolism of hundreds of formations, like a graphologist would study someone's handwriting. So imagine you're us, and you've studied, let's say, a dozen different people's handwriting for the last 20 years, every day. And you've come to know every little nuance of expression in those designs. And you've come to see how people state that, you know, how they put themselves into it. For example, how human circle makers put their egos and their ideas and their contrived designs down, and how, for example, genuine formations which have incredible geometry, mathematics, design symbolism, biophysics, phenomenal events associated with them, with this phenomenon having made world media attention in 1990, it just sucked in a whole load of people wanting to try and see how easy it was to make formations, and then people who became motivated to try to prove that the researchers couldn't tell one from another, and then people who just very insidiously going into fields and imitating or copying and rehashing aspects of real formations or, you know, design elements of real formations, so that a lot of people looking at the phenomenon just can't tell easily one from another, and that many, right across the board, including many researchers, I mean, we feel that we look in books and calendars, we see in every single one more than half are man-made, and they're not being called out as man-made. There's a great lacking of discernment.
Mm-hmm.
And that's also how the Center of Human Circle Makers have hijacked this phenomenon.
Well, when we come back, let's open up the phone lines. I also want to talk about something that happened 10 years after you began your crop circle research, that historic Shoemaker-Levy comet that smashed into Jupiter. Ed and Chris Sherwood, our guest now. The historic 1994 Shoemaker-Levy comet that smashed into Jupiter threw off some interesting images that somehow also showed up as a crop formation. Well, tell me about that.
Indeed, and really I should pass this to Chris because she was the one that actually discovered
okay.
it and wrote an excellent article on our website detailing this and other related events. So can I pass it to Chris?
You may.
Yeah, sure. In fact, we could probably do an hour just on the 1994 crop formations and how they reflected this comet collision on Jupiter. There were many, many formations. Probably the most striking, to the point, not to use a pun, but to the point one, is this picture of Jupiter that shows the impact of the largest fragment of that comet. That comet had stretched out into 21 fragments as it approached Jupiter. And the fragments were letter-coded, and this one is called the G impact because the G fragment was the largest one. And this impact created a design, a shockwave design, that appeared 9 days after this collided with Jupiter. It appeared as a crop circle formation, which you see as the next diagram.
Which is almost identical to the actual impact. Look.
Almost identical.
Yeah,
and
that's weird.
Nobody knew this image. It was not in the public consciousness at the time the crop circle formed. And this is true of several other formations that happened that year that reflected aspects of this comet collision, which was historic. It gave us, on Earth, a vantage point view of what it would be like to see an Earth-killing comet strike a close-by planet, and a real consciousness-raising event, and it was really reflected remarkably in the crop formations, and we find this because we feel it was in the collective consciousness of humanity. People were watching the skies, watching the comet collision as it happened, and it somehow was reflected in many crop formations of that summer.
We feel that it was a historic event.
And you believe that
consciousness.
You believe that formation, though, to be authentic. My point is here that someone sees a picture of the G impact and goes out and makes a crop formation.
Exactly, but they couldn't in this case because there was no picture for them to use.
No way. Okay.
Yeah, it wasn't out. It wasn't released until many weeks later.
Okay.
It wasn't available. And this formation that appeared, it was over 300 feet, that bigger than a football field in diameter. This formation was tremendous.
It was also called the Shoemaker-Levy 9 comet. And this appeared 9 days after the impact, plus it consisted of 9 circles.
Strange.
We total up the number of circles that make the glyph, there's 9. You know, it's a message. It's reinforcing and affirming that, yes, we do live in a cosmic shooting gallery, and it is part of our cosmic collective wake-up call to realize that we do. And it's part of this big shift that we're going through of, realizing more our environment, both natural and also the fact that we're not alone as intelligent beings.
Okay, let's go to the phones. We'll pick it up by going to our first-time caller line. You're on the air with Ed and Chris Sherwood on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hello.
Yes, sir.
Yes, this is Jeff Tulsa.
Go ahead, Jeff. Great. Good to have you with us.
Well, thank you. I just thank you, George, for your show. I appreciate it so much.
Sure.
Thank you, Ed and Chris, for spending time with us on the air here.
Thanks, Jeff.
My question is, why don't they just do you have an opinion on why they just don't contact us as a whole? I mean, obviously, or allegedly, I mean, they've contacted governments, per show, other guests talk about it. And I know that I've heard a lot about signs over different shows, but why not just stand on land and talk to us? Do you have an opinion about that?
Yeah, I do. I have many ideas as to why that is. There's not just one, but I think that, you know, one reason is because, for the most part, they have a policy of non-intervention. We know from our own history that when a more advanced civilization comes into contact with a less, physically advanced civilization, it invariably follows it up, or rather it affects it in such a way that it brings benefits often, but it also creates a crisis for the culture that it comes into contact with. you know, it causes you to question so many things and reevaluate your perception of reality. And in a sense, that's, of course, what this phenomenon does. And I think that those that have a consideration towards us are doing it and have been doing it gently. They're doing it gently because they need to do it safely, not just for us, but also for them. And because they want it to be peaceful. They want this open exchange to happen someday, which I feel is coming up on us. But we have to also, on a collective scale, and you know, there are people listening to this program who are already convinced that we're not alone and have had experiences of their own. Well, these people have been reached. But what about all of the others that haven't yet seen something for themselves? And also, in humanity, there is great fear. We're a tremendously fearful race or species. And again, I think this creates tremendous obstacles for, let's say, a spiritual civilization that comes with love and peace, but a high technology and so many things that they could share and teach us. But I think they want this to be a balanced thing. You know, in the past, when extraterrestrials revealed themselves, like in our, I think in our distant past, in our history, we've tended to worship them and think of them as gods. Now we've reached a point in our own evolutionary development where we see them more like they really are, as beings from another other worlds, other environments, other dimensions, if you like. Now we're closer than ever before in our history, I think, to have this global
message, I guess, yeah,
that we're not alone. However, it still has to be done very carefully, because I know from living in England, for example, in a valley where, you know, it's one of the major UFO hotspots in the world, and within minutes of anything appearing, be it a ball plasma or structured craft, there's more than one military helicopter heading straight for it. This kind of response is not necessarily you know, the most positive or productive, and
well, we're not sending a clear message to the originators, are we?
No, and it's also a process of initiation in a way. Again, I know from my own experience that in some ways I was plunged in the deep end right in the get-go. I had a close encounter with a being at the age of 9, which terrified me at the time, but put me on a course where I would examine those things and come to lose my fear. And what a difference it makes to have no fear with the experience. I mean, really, our fears condition our lives so much and our perception of life. But when we succeed to free ourselves from fear, then you can really start to experience what is really there. And again, to go back to the original question, why don't they just land? Well, they've done almost everything but that, and they have done landings. There have been landings, but obviously, you know.
I guess we're all looking for the big blitz on television.
We're all looking for the big one, and yeah. Honestly, I do think that we're reaching that time period where we can have it, because there's so many people out with camcorders now. There's so much activity, UFO sightings occurring to make us aware that we're not alone. So much evidence that I think that you know, that this is going to increase, and the bubble is going to burst at a certain point. And I think that really, before there is mass disclosure from a governmental level, there's going to be a mass exposure of the extraterrestrial reality.
Well, let's go west of the Rockies. You're on Coast to Coast. Hello.
Yes, this is Victoria from San Francisco.
Hi, Victoria.
Yes, Ed and Chris, I appreciate you being on the program. I think we need more and more like you people with information. I think, like the preceding caller had said, why are we getting more obvious connection? And I think a lot of it has to do with the media seems to make them so negative, and so many movies like War of the Worlds were terrible fear instead of love. And there is so much information out. They have the UFO disclosure people. And then have you heard of Sheldon Neidl from the planetary activation group. They are coming through with so much information about how they want to come down and be with us in love. But the timing has to be right. So,
exactly. That message has been echoed now for several decades, I think.
And I'm grateful that you're on the air and trying to give this information, and which Sheldon did too, also about the mass UFOs that are all over. And we need to look up in love and have faith that it's all for a spiritual progress, so we can all get along in the world.
Definitely. Yeah. Even exactly. You said it so right. And even some of the negative experiences, I think, ultimately can teach us spiritual things. Not that they're trying to teach us spiritual things, but we can learn from them and gain spiritual understandings. To say a little bit about the flying humanoids down in Mexico and the fleets, my feeling is, as a UFO ET experiencer, and looking at what's been happening worldwide for many years, I feel, my gut feeling is that the humanoids that are being seen are not the same beings that are operating the crafts that are being seen as the fleets. Hmm. I think we're witnessing more than one civilization making its presence known here, and we have to be, I think, try to be smart about this. Although we want to come, we want the experience to be peaceful and to be with love, both from us and from them, we have to realize that just as there are people on planet Earth, there are probably beings and probably civilizations on different levels of self-knowledge and development, and that maybe not all of them coming here and appearing care about the planet or ourselves necessarily. There may be ones coming for more selfish motivations, and I am a little concerned about some of these flying humanoids over Mexico, for example, because they're being very brazen in their openness. But
in Mexico, at
in
least.
Mexico, but one of the encounters resulted in violence. One of the first sightings that Santiago Yuteria made available, made us aware of, and people via the internet, was of a sighting that a flying humanoid count that occurred January last year, where a policeman in Mexico was attacked by the entity after he turned his high beams onto it. Early hours of the morning, a district of Mexico City, Guadalupe, he saw something descend from a tree, hovering just off the ground, and then sit down on the ground, looking like a humanoid figure, and he turned his high beams onto it, which caused great a negative reaction from this particular entity or being, which flew at him and at the windscreen of his patrol car, scared him to death, made him hit the accelerator to get away. He slammed into a brick wall, knocked himself out. This was being heard at the same time by policemen in other patrol cars heading in that area, and there was also an ambulance on its way, which arrived soon after, and this was all filmed. Santiago has done an excellent in-depth report on it, but it's almost like a little reminder, I feel, that we need to know, obviously, who's coming. And since we don't know a great deal about them, really the best guide we have is to see how they act. And if they act in ways that are like controlling or aggressive, then you can be sure these are not the right ones.
Of everything you've studied with regards to this entire phenomena, anything just shock you, Ed, in your research?
Not really. I've been shocked plenty in my life by surprising events, but you know, I've had a few surprising encounters that I wasn't necessarily expecting at the time that definitely were shocking to start off with. But I grew up with this, and I grew up with this from early childhood. It's almost been the norm for me to witness parapsychological phenomena, craft, UFOs, plasma, and then and entities, beings. So it's kind of been almost a norm for me. So I'm not as shocked as some might to say a given event.
How about you, Chris?
I can say I did have, as Ed was speaking, I was
thinking of the one incident we had where I was pretty terrified. He was not afraid because he'd had this experience before, but several years ago we were in a crop circle at around midnight, and we were doing some photography, trying to photograph some, you know, luminous energy that might be present in the crop circle, and we became aware of a helicopter in the next field. And when we looked up, we saw this helicopter was following a UFO, and this was only about 250 feet from us. It was very close.
Right.
And as soon as apparently the helicopter spotted us with the night vision in the field, it stopped pursuing the UFO, and it came toward us in the field. It turned off its light so that we had a dark Black Hawk helicopter coming at us just feet above the wheat and about 50 feet away from us, and I was really terrified.
That got to me.
The ET event was fine. It was the human response that was terrifying.
The human helicopter that did you in, huh?
Yeah, were it not for the helicopter, we would have had a tremendous experience probably. But
And we still ended up filming at the end of it. It turned out there were two UFOs involved in that incident. The helicopter eventually left us and followed the first one away, and a second UFO then floated into the field next to us, totally silent, completely. It was very low to the ground. It was below the hill line.
Structured object.
A structured object. We filmed it, and other people at another distant location filmed it as well, and it was quite amazing.
How do these choppers get on the scene so fast?
I think they have more than one way of detecting, and sometimes, you know, a UFO can be in the air, and you don't pick it up on radar. But they can probably flick to something else that does, and I think one of the things they probably use is some way of detecting the electromagnetic, particularly geomagnetic energy of the land, because it's been found, for example, I think Paul Devereaux, science researcher years ago in Australia, when trying to study the I think it was the Min Min light.
Yeah, hold that thought, Ed. We'll be right back. We'll take final phone calls. We'll let you finish that up when we come back. And welcome to Coast. I'm George Norrie, Ed and Chris Sherwood. Ed, why don't you finish that Paul Devereaux story, then we'll go back for final calls.
Okay. Very briefly, he was in Australia doing experiments, and he used a ground instrument that registered geomagnetic energy.
Mm-hmm.
And he noticed that when the ball plasmas appeared, there was a great spike on his geomagnetic device. And I suspect the military have means like that to register these spikes, because I think when the ball plasmas do manifest, they do generate an electromagnetic signature. And to live in a valley where I witnessed more than 90% of the UFOs intercepted by at least one helicopter within several minutes shows that they definitely have more than radar at their disposal.
All right, let's go to the phones. East of the Rockies, welcome to Coast to Coast. You're on the air with us. Hi there.
Hi, how you doing?
Good.
This is Eric from Vernon.
Hi, Eric.
Hi, Eric.
From Connecticut, sorry. I just had one real quick question. I was wondering if you ever tried to correlate the Nazca lines to any of the crop circles. I know they're different animals, but have you ever correlated that?
In Peru.
Not correlated, but I think they are different animals. Although there are some similarities in that they're best viewed from above. I think the Nazca lines were used as ceremonial walking meditational spaces and avenues, at least some of them, and so they fall on sacred space, as do the formations. But yes, often over the years I've kind of glanced over at the Nazca lines and wondered, but I don't see a strong correlation.
Could they have been, though, the first crop circles?
Well, I don't think they were the first crop circles, but they were made by people, but there may have been phenomenal events like in Great Britain and other parts of the world, for example. I mean, the average size of a genuine crop circle, simple circle, is practically the same size as your average sacred site in England. So, and where they form and the geometries that they have shown, some of them, I think that there's a definite possibility that ancient man witnessed something perhaps similar to the crop circle phenomenon themselves, and
be.
Their response to it was to mark out these sacred places.
Are there marked differences between crop circles, the formations, and let's say the way the wheat is knocked down? Are there similarities as opposed to man-made crop formations?
Well, there is one basic thing that separates a non-man-made crop circle from one that is man-made, but you need to kind of be one of the first people there to see it, because this evidence is destroyed very quickly, and that is plants bent at 90 degrees without even a crease near to the ground, or sometimes above. I stepped into a formation in 91, and part of the formation, it was a pictogram, included a 60-foot diameter circle, and just the top 4 inches of the mature wheat was bent 90 degrees and rotated, forming a circle. So you couldn't even step into it because it was only about 4 inches deep in the crop. That is definitely an indication of something non-man-made. The human-made circles typically crease, sometimes break off, but mostly crease. They don't break every stem by any means, which is, some people have misidentified that or seen that as an indication that because it's not broken, it's only crimped, that is probably a sign of it being genuine, but it's actually not. We had a formation at Laguna Canyon in 96 where you could see the natural bend of the plant, and there's a big article on our website, on our articles page, all about it, where you could see the plants were like steamed into position.
Okay, let's go to our wildcard line. You're up with us on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi, good evening, Noah. Good morning.
Good evening.
Hello.
Hey, my name is Greg, calling from St. Louis. George, I'd just like to compliment you guys on a great show.
Thanks, Greg.
Thank
and,
you.
I'm curious, when you, as your guest, when you have a knowing of what you know, and it seems to me, you know, it's like simplicity to you, yes or no? Hello?
Hello. Do we have that, do you say?
Have a knowing, is that what you said?
Yeah, you know, what you know, the guys, I mean, what you're speaking on, it, and you know what you know. This is not a, is this basically theory, or is this something that you know?
No, this is, most of what we're saying is what we know from either our own direct experience or many years of research.
Okay.
Yes.
Correct.
Now, we're not speculating.
Right. So what I'm saying, but when you come to a knowing such, how do I say, when you come to a level of knowing mm-hmm. what you know, it's simplicity to you, yes?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
My question, okay, again, my problem is, how do you not just, you know, go, lulu, lulu, you know what I'm saying, because everybody
yeah.
around you doesn't understand, because I understand, certain things cannot be told in words.
Sure.
But when I know something, I know. When I don't know, I hush, I listen, I observe, you know, try to gain more knowledge. But what you guys are speaking of is simplicity. You know, well, all we have to do is real simple.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very simple. Come together as one.
Mm-hmm.
Is that the main message here, Ed and Chris?
It's one of them. It certainly is one of the major messages. And I think the miracles that have been appearing in the fields from the divine source, we mustn't think of this as something external, totally external from us. I think it is. We are part of that process. We, in a way, we are co-creators of this phenomenon, and it's also a part of our coming of age, I think, as a species on this planet, as a collective consciousness. You know, we walk around this world feeling so inside ourselves, so individualized and in some ways alone, but consciousness is not a thing, it's a state, and it's not just individual, it's collective. And it operates with laws and forces that function on a collective scale as well as a individualized scale. And I think the message that we are all one has been echoed in this phenomenon in many different ways.
Yes. And I think we as a species on this planet have been behaving like we are alone. We're not respecting the planet. We're not thinking about
exactly.
its future survival or the future survival of its animals or its even our grandchildren or our children with what we're doing to the environment through our really selfish, you know, our, you know, speaking in kind of a collective way, our selfish use of resources and disrespecting of the planet and its life forms. And this is what something we really must learn or perish, you know.
It's also, I think, the message of the phenomenon, the genuine crop circle phenomenon, and that, when I say genuine, I mean from the primary source.
But I'm not sure they're going to step in and save us, Ed and Chris.
I don't think it's going to be, I'm not like that. We have to save ourselves for the most part.
Right.
I think they're here to help us help ourselves. But there's a great obstacle in the way between us and them, and that is our fear. And they've been trying to educate us in gradual ways by keep appearing over here and over there and over there. So we finally, you know, if we don't have the direct experience ourselves, we hear it so much or we see so much evidence that it begins to, you know, stimulate the change that needs to take place on Earth.
West of the Rockies, you're up with us on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hello.
Yeah.
How you guys doing?
We
Hi,
are
good,
well. Thanks.
Good. Hi there.
This is Brett from Lodi, California. I was just wondering what the bottom intent is on these crop circles. I'm not real educated on them. And what is it, a language or numerical signs or something we don't even understand? What's the bottom intent they're giving us?
Well, the signs, I think, are very understandable once we get our heads around them. And they're definitely numeric, geometric, symbolic. They have other aspects, too, like the biophysics. And all of these different things can teach us something and awaken us to other realities. And I think that's what these are here to do. They're, even crop circles created by an ET source, excluding, let's say, those ETs that just made a landing mark because they were after something else and they left and they didn't care what we thought about it. But I think that there are definitely even ET events that leave behind evidence for us to question. You know, we've our scientific community leads us in a certain direction in this world and in such a strong way that we often forget the spiritual. And I think these things are happening, these modern-day miracles that have been happening for the last 20 years, fulfilling prophecy, are to awaken us.
Do you remember the crop formation of a couple of years ago that had the alien face?
Yeah, big man-made formation.
Well, do you think that was an authentic?
No, definitely not.
Man-made?
No. Remember, the movie Signs was very much the rage, and it was like a big advertisement.
Yes. They paid some farmer to use his field, I bet.
Yeah, exactly.
In fact, the human circle makers are the ones who are profiting the most from this. They get quite large fees for making logos and fields for different
companies
advertising.
And stuff. My God.
Well, all the researchers are self-funded and out there trying to, you know, try to gather evidence with no resources.
Wildcard Line, it's your turn on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi, my name is Mary. I'm calling from Albany.
Hi, Mary.
Hi. Great show tonight, by the way.
Thank you.
I wanted to know a few things. One, what is the attraction, like, why don't we not see, like, UFOs in, like, say, like, New York? What's the attraction to, like, Mexico or Nevada or wherever? And two, could these symbols that they've been doing in the crop circles, whether they be man-made or being channeled man-made or being alien-made, could they be some kind of a map or something?
To take the last question first, we haven't found any evidence from our investigation that there is a map being indicated, or if there, you know, if there have been some made by some formations made by an extraterrestrial source, and some of those are the hardest ones to decipher if they're pictographic at all, and probably because they're writing their own appendix and we don't know what that really is. But the other ones, you can definitely tell. But again, why more UFO activity over Mexico City? I think because the Mexican people as a whole, that includes the media, the government, the military, the civilian population, as a whole, more than any other country, has been responding the most positive overall to the fact that their airspace is visited by other intelligences. And that is the kind of response that the ETs that come here with peace need to come closer, to reveal themselves to us, to not scare us. to not make us feel belittled by their technology or their knowledge or whatever. I think that we're all different equals, and we could probably teach them some things too. So to start off, we need to acknowledge their existence. UFOs have been appearing over major centers of population around the world, including sightings in New York City. It's just that they are more open in Mexico right now, I think, because they are acknowledging their existence.
So they feel wanted.
They feel they exist, you know. And this is the other thing, and a very important point. I think each and every one of us can encourage this process to accelerate. It doesn't have to move along at a snail's pace. We can really change this if we do things to encourage it. And something I didn't mention earlier was what a close encounter of the fifth kind is. A close encounter of the fifth kind, in my interpretation, is a self-initiated encounter.
Like what you've done.
Like what I've done many times, and some other people have done. But in my experience of contact with an extraterrestrial intelligence, and even experiences of plasma and the divine source in a way, is that there's a process you go through, and the other intelligences initiate that up to a point. But what they do is in respect to what you do too. So if you recognize them for who they are,
mm-hmm.
and acknowledge them, then they're going to recognize you. If you keep saying they don't exist, then maybe you force them to have to keep it at a certain level, and you encourage them to go to perhaps others who are more open. But I think that we're reaching a point in human history where, because of mass media, because of the idea of other intelligence existing in the universe, it's common now in television programming, because of all the footage, because of all the events, we're reaching that kind of collective
consciousness?
Yeah, critical mass. And there's going to be enough people aware. Well, I think there's enough people aware already, but maybe a little more time has to go before they can fully reveal themselves. And when they do that, I still think they're going to do it safely, which means probably most of them are going to stay up in the sky, stay for a few days, a few nights for us all to see, and then they're going to disappear. I mean, I'm not saying this purely from my own
right.
inner feelings. It's also coming from other sources.
Sooner than later, Ed?
Yes, because the planet, because Mother Earth is suffering big time. We can't keep doing global warming causing effects and think we'll be okay. Maybe, you know, some of us will be okay in our lifetime, but our children won't. And, of course, the planet is much too precious to let it go down through our actions like that. So,
and if they don't, though, reveal themselves to us, does that mean they just don't care?
I would say so at this point, definitely.
Yeah. Then they have perhaps another agenda.
Say again?
Then they have another agenda.
Yes, and I think some of them do. And that's why we have to be discerning. And that's why we have to know that UFOs, crop circles, psychic phenomena, you know, you look at the subject as a whole, you realize that there's ordinary things that you have to differentiate from the extraordinary to be sure of what you're studying. And then I think when you get to the bottom of the crop circle subject, you find it spiritual. When you get to the bottom of the UFO subject, you find it spiritual. And the same with parapsychological phenomena. And that we need to proceed in a positive way with this, and we particularly need to, I mean, I think if America started to really increase its programming, for example, showing the footage that just exists thus far from Mexico and other places, just from the last 5 years, awful lot more people would be aware and prepared for something bigger to happen.
How can people track your research?
The best way to follow us right now is through our website, CropCircleAnswers.com. We're working on several books. And we're working on a lot of articles for the website, too. So you can find out much more about what we've said tonight from our website. But know, too, that that's only a fraction of what we've yet to reveal.
All right. Well, hopefully sooner than later, Ed and Chris, whatever happens, happens in our lifetime, because I'd like to be a witness to it.
Oh,
definitely.
We would, too, very much.
Okay. Thank you both.
Thank you so much, George.
Thank you, George, and all your listeners,
yes,
too.
Thank you, everybody.
Okay, very good. Ed and Chris Sherwood, they've devoted their life to crop formation investigations, and they believe that sooner than later, there's going to be some major revelation. Be kind of interesting when it happens, doesn't it? For Dan Galante, Steve Carr, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Latasseur, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie. Somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM, I'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.